Hello, it is Thursday, June 4th. I'm Lodi Avola, and I'll be reading to you today from the front pages of the New York Times and the Hartford Courant. We'll begin, as we always do, with a description of the photographs on both papers, beginning with the Times. The top photograph, about a 5x7, these are all in color, shows a 91-foot statue of Shivaji, a 17th century monarch, and it's rising from a seaside fort he built at the southern Indian town of Malvan. The statue shows a male figure with his right hand holding a sword erect, and his other hand, his left hand, is on the scabbard for that sword. And then in front of this statue, several people, a whole group of women, one taking a selfie of the group of women, all dressed in traditional Indian garb, and then there are a mixture of people in the background, and then there's another woman also taking a selfie of a man and a young boy. And then also on the Times, there are headshots of three candidates for governor in California. Steve Hilton, who is a Republican, Javier Becerra, who is a Democrat, they are leading. And then the third photograph is of Tom Steyer, a Democrat, and he is pledging to stay in the race. And then on the front of the Current, the top story has a small headshot of Jaden McCormick. He's a legislative, controversial legislative candidate. We will have that story today. And then two photographs together. One is the smaller of the two, shows a demolition. It's the inside of a building, and demolition is the exact word. Things have been torn down. There are ladders, wires hanging, and it's of the old, through a window of the old Stackpole Moore and Tryon clothing store in downtown Hartford. And that space may become a clubhouse on Pratt, it will be called. And the photograph above it is an illustration, certainly very, very realistic. It looks more like a photograph. And it's of the a massive and definitely massive bar, which is planned for this $2.3 million clubhouse on Pratt. It's at the corner of Pratt and Trumbull Street, and the hope is that this will be a very attractive, at least judging by the illustration, venue for downtown Hartford. And then the final photograph, about a 3x5, is of a Freedom Truck Mobile Museum, that's in quotes, for America's 250th birthday. And it's a massive truck, and painted on the side, patriotic, looks like the Revolutionary War, patriotic images painted on this truck. And then in large letters, pulling, the museum itself says Freedom Truck along the side. And we will have a story about that today. So with that, we'll go to the Times. Our first section is devoted to the New York Times. Top story, two top stories under one banner headline, which says, House approves reining in Trump over war in Iran. And then the first story under that, four in GOP back vote as hurdles remain. The House on Wednesday voted to direct President Trump to withdraw U.S. forces from Iran or win approval from Congress to continue the war, after four Republicans sided with Democrats in a striking sign of growing opposition to a military campaign now in its fourth month. Adoption of the resolution was a remarkable rebuke to Mr. Trump and his handling of the war, after he has repeatedly dismissed any effort by Congress to curb his power, and as the GOP has largely ceded its prerogatives to do so, deferring to him time and again. Republicans had abruptly postponed the vote 2 weeks ago, recognizing that they did not have sufficient votes to defeat the measure and wanting to spare themselves and the president the affront. But they made no headway over the ensuing days in winning converts, as the conflict has dragged on and Mr. Trump has made little progress toward ending it. And GOP leaders were unable to delay the vote any longer because Democrats had invoked the War Powers Resolution, which requires consideration of such measures within a limited period of time. The move was also the latest reflection of divisions between Republicans in Congress and the president on a range of issues as their interests diverge in the run-up to the midterm congressional elections. It came after Senate Republicans have in recent days forced Mr. Trump to abandon his request for $1 billion in security funding for his ballroom project and a plan that the Justice Department announced to create a federal fund to pay claimants who accuse the government of having victimized them. The vote was 215 to 208 to adopt the War Powers Resolution, sending it to the Senate. Even if it were to pass both chambers, the ability of lawmakers to force a president to withdraw troops remains a contested question. And Mr. Trump and his senior aides have dismissed any effort by Congress to limit his war powers as unconstitutional. But the vote in the House and similar ones in the Senate last month, when a handful of GOP defectors broke from the president and opposed the war, indicate an increasing willingness by some members of the president's party to pressure him to end a conflict that a majority of Americans say is not worth the costs. And the second part of that, under that banner headline, Tehran hits Kuwait in drone attacks. A civilian was killed and dozens of others were injured at Kuwait's international airport on Wednesday after Iran fired a barrage of missiles and drones at the country, Kuwait and the United States said. It was one of the biggest Iranian strikes and the first known fatality in a Gulf nation since the ceasefire took effect in April. The attack inflamed tensions in the region as indirect peace talks between Iran and the United States dragged on with no clear resolution. A spokesman for Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps said it had not fired at the airport and blamed the damage on U.S. Patriot missile interceptors that failed to hit Iranian missiles and fell on the building. U.S. Central Command, which oversees American forces in the Middle East, denied the claim and said Iran had struck the airport with drones in a, quote, deliberate, calculated, and unjustified attack, end quote. Kuwait also said the airport had been hit by an Iranian drone. Video footage verified by the New York Times showed people running from fire and smoke in Terminal 1 of Kuwait International Airport, where a gaping hole had been ripped in the roof. The Kuwaiti authorities said an Indian resident had been killed and at least 63 other people injured, including travelers and airport workers. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, mimicking a phrase used by the American military, said that Iran had launched self-defense strikes, that's in quotes, against sites that the United States used as staging grounds for attacks. In recent years, American forces have operated out of a site in the Kuwaiti airport complex, although it was unclear if they were still doing so or if that had been the intended target. Kuwait's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said it had told Tehran that it had refused to allow its land or airspace to be used, quote, for any act of aggression against any country, end quote. Incensed by the strike on Wednesday, Kuwait said it had summoned the interim charge d'affaires of the Iranian embassy to lodge an official protest and had declared two Iranian diplomats persona non grata, demanding that they leave the country within 24 hours. Since the beginning of the war, Iran has also struck major energy facilities, ports, and hotels in Gulf countries as it seeks to punish U.S. allies and increase economic pressure on the Trump administration. Trump testing new grounds for old tariffs. Since the Supreme Court struck down President Trump's global tariffs in February, his administration has been busily working to reconstruct them, exploring legal options that would allow it to build back the tariff wall between the U.S. economy and the rest of the world. Late Tuesday night, the Trump administration unveiled part of its Plan B, a tariff of 10% to 12.5% on 59 countries and the 27-member European Union. The levies were intended to pressure governments that the United States says have not enacted or enforced laws against trading goods made with forced labor. Those tariffs could go into effect as soon as July, and they are unlikely to be the last ones. The administration is working on another slate of tariffs related to countries' manufacturing practices that will presumably be in addition to the forced labor ones. The tariffs will be rolled out at a sensitive time for the administration, as voters who are dissatisfied with higher prices from the war with Iran and trade policies prepare to head to the polls. But officials appear intent on patching back together Mr. Trump's vision for replacing the decades-old global trade order, which he argues has been unfair to American business and left the country with growing trade deficits. The new tariffs will be imposed under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974, a law that allows the president to issue tariffs to respond to other countries' trade practices. Legal experts said they are likely to be more durable than the initial law Mr. Trump used to enact tariffs, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. Mr. Trump used Section 301 in his first term to wage a trade war with China, and the tariffs he put in place have survived plenty of court challenges. No administration, however, has ever used the provision in such a sweeping way before. The experience of watching the administration cycle from one legal explanation to another for its tariffs, only to have those levies struck down by courts, has left some feeling cynical. Over the past year, the Trump administration has shifted through various legal rationales to impose its tariffs. Three pursue two spots in tight race to lead California. Three candidates are locked in a tight race for two spots in the November election for California governor as election officials continue counting millions of ballots cast in the primary. Results as of Wednesday afternoon showed that Steve Hilton, a Republican and former Fox News host, and Javier Becerra, a Democrat and former California Attorney General, held the top two positions to advance to the November election. But Tom Steyer, a former hedge fund manager, was in a close third place and told supporters in San Francisco that he was, quote, going to wait until every ballot is counted, end quote. We're going to give democracy time to work, he added. In California's primary, candidates of all parties run on the same ballot, and the top two finishers, regardless of party, advance to the November election. It's the first time since California began using the top two primary system in 2012 that a governor's race has been this close, making it possible that two Democrats could advance to compete for the state's top office. Many Californians were uncertain about whom to back for governor and waited until the last minute to cast their ballots, which was expected to slow the tally of final results. The initial election results reflect ballots that were cast early in the voting period. Republicans returned ballots at a faster pace than Democrats did, so the early results were expected to favor Republican candidates, including Mr. Hilton. The election marked the end of dominance by a cadre of San Francisco Democrats who have wielded enormous influence on California politics for decades. Governor Gavin Newsom is termed out of office. Representative Nancy Pelosi is retiring. Neither of them endorsed a candidate for governor, and the volatile race to replace Mr. Newsom revealed a fading of dynastic power among California Democrats. It was the most wide open contest for governor that California has seen since the 1990s, because it lacked heavyweights and did not have a clear favorite at the start. It began with 10 competitive candidates. By the final month, the leading Democrats were Mr. Steyer and Mr. Becerra, as well as Katie Porter, a former congresswoman. Justice's ruling lets Alabama end a majority black district. The Supreme Court on Tuesday night cleared the way for Alabama to eliminate a majority black congressional district, a win for Republicans as they fight to hold on to their slim majority in the House. The ruling served as the first major test since the justices in April weakened the landmark Voting Rights Act of 1965. The practical effect of the four-page ruling, which was unsigned, is that Alabama can immediately swap out its current map, which has two majority black districts, for a map that has only one, giving Republicans a crucial advantage in flipping the seat back into conservative hands. The court's three liberal justices joined in dissent. The conservative justices in the majority wrote that a unanimous three-judge panel that had blocked the map in late May after determining that it was racially discriminatory had, quote, failed to follow our instruction, end quote, in light of the court's recent Voting Rights Act ruling. In siding with Alabama, the majority found that the lower court had improperly interfered with elected representatives as they organized an imminent election. States are free to decide for themselves whether last-minute changes to an election are in their best interests, the majority wrote. Justice Sonia Sotomayor, writing on behalf of the court's liberal bloc, asserted that the court's decision would lead to a, quote, chaotic election held under a never-before-used congressional map that intentionally discriminates against black Alabamians. She added she believed that the decision, quote, debases the democratic process and corrodes the rule of law by rewarding Alabama's gamesmanship and outright defiance of court orders, end quote. With the order, the court's majority also sent a message for how it will view discrimination claims going forward, even those vetted by lower court judges. The justices rejected a finding by three federal judges, including two appointed by President Trump, that there was evidence the map had been drawn intentionally to discriminate. The majority wrote that the lower court's analysis had departed, and that's in quotes, from the Supreme Court's recent Voting Rights Act decision. The ruling underscores how much harder it will be for groups and individuals to prove that legislative maps discriminate on the basis of race going forward.